Big show for you here today. Dave Kluge joins me to break down 10 pressing fantasy questions we have this offseason that we want answered, but guess what? We're not going to get them answered. So, yeah, that's right. We have no answers to these questions. And yet, we're going to talk about them. We're going to break them down. And we theorize when we might, if we will, get some answers to these questions. Jaguars wide receivers. Who's going to start a quarterback for the Raiders? Are we completely missing the boat on the changes in the Packers wide receiver room? Tons of that coming up and more on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is Dave Kluge of Football Guys. Dave, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much. This is a fun topic. I'm glad you came to me with this one, because this is the point in the offseason where we just have so many questions, and a lot of people are just out here speaking in absolutes in May, like they know what's going to be happening this year. And no, there's still so much to discuss and so many pieces of the puzzle that we need before we can put that picture together.
Yes, I'm glad that you were as excited about this show topic as I was, and you picked up my vibe right away, what I wanted to go for it. Essentially, today, what we're going to be doing is we're going to talk about 10 pressing fantasy questions that we want answered, and yet Dave and I will admit that we are not going to get these answers certainly anytime soon. Not here in May. We're not going to get them in June. We might at best get them, Dave, in training camp. If not, like, not until the regular season. Some of these are just going to be some unanswerable fantasy questions. So I think just for us here, it should be a good exercise for the listener. It should also, Dave, be a good exercise for us to admit, like, hey, you know what? We don't know. These are some things that we have no idea what we're going to get, but we should at least talk out the possibilities here.
Absolutely. And I think you might even be too brazen in saying that we'll know when the regular season starts. Some of these situations are going to be fluid through the regular season. We're like, what we think in week one might not be true in week four and might not be true in week 12. So, I mean, that's the fun of fantasy football, is our friend JJ Zacharyson likes to say, kind of living in that gray area and just accepting it.
100%. As I always say, Sigmund Bloom, of course, from Football Guys, says, you know, you could be right and wrong about a player, team, situation within the course of one season. You'd be right and wrong. So that is the beauty of this. And I think a lot of these situations, really painting back to last year, kind of had those themes to it, those feels to it. But just before we jump into the topics today, I do want to say we are pre-taping this episode a day early. This is coming out on Thursday. I know it's schedule release day. As I mentioned on the last show that we did with Joel Smith, I'm opting out of schedule release content this year. My wedding anniversary is on Thursday, so I'm not going to be available on Thursday to talk about the schedule release. I hope you guys are loving the schedule release content. We don't have a schedule release show. I think you'll survive without it. I think this will be more interesting and more useful for the people out there. So let's waste no more time talking about the schedule, not schedule podcast. Dave, what is your first question that you have here for the show today?
Well, on the topic of fluid situations, last year we saw the Jacksonville Jaguars wide receiver room was just a different story every single week. And now going into 2026, I have a ton of questions and I don't think that we have answers here. Right now, I see Jacoby Myers going as the third guy off the board, and I think that's a pretty good value. I like Brian Thomas Jr. You know, I see the theoretical upside if he can rewind the clock and look like the guy he was his rookie season. Of course, there's the whole Travis Hunter of it as well. This guy is just being left for dead in fantasy drafts right now, and I think he still has the same upside that he had going into his rookie season. We've got Parker Washington in the mix now as well. Brenton Strange. There are a lot of mouths to feed in Jacksonville, and I don't know if ADP necessarily has it right at the moment.
So your biggest contention here is that the big overall question is, like, which wide receiver do we want to draft? If we go by ADP, yes, right now it's Brian Thomas Jr. and then some combination of Parker Washington, Jacoby Myers, and then obviously Travis Hunter much farther down. Your contention is that might not be correct. Like, do you have a lean in this situation, or is this one of those you're not 100% sure either?
I mean, if I had a slight lean, of course, I'm doing drafts at this point and I have to stake some sort of claim. I've got like a slight lean towards Jacoby Myers just because of how cheap he is. I do think that he is a great fit in this Liam Cohen offense. He does the things that Liam Cohen asks of his receivers, catches the ball through traffic, across the middle of the field, isn't afraid to really just get popped when he's catching the ball. And we saw last year, Brian Thomas Jr., kind of the alligator arms when he was in that role. But Parker Washington can do that too. And Travis Hunter can do that too. If I did have one strong flag plant on this room, I think it's that Travis Hunter is probably just the most undervalued here. We got that February report saying that, you know, he was going to be playing primarily as cornerback. Everything we've heard from Liam Cohen, James Gladstone, even Travis Hunter himself is that he is going to be a wide receiver. So, I mean, even if this guy is just on the field for 40% of the snaps, if he's getting elite per route run targets, he can still be fantasy relevant.
It's a great point, and I'm with you that the aggregator reports, all of that stuff, it's like complete nonsense, right? Like what we've seen, what we've heard from everybody involved with the team, not to mention people that like John Shipley and folks who really cover the team in depth, is that like, yeah, there's no he's only playing defense playing or he's like sprinkling in on offense. Like he is still expected to be a pretty heavily featured player on offense. And of course he should be. Like I just got done charting the year two reception perception crop of players for the site. And it certainly wasn't like I'll be the first to tell you it was not perfect for Travis Hunter last year. There are things he needs to work on. He needs to get better in terms of spatial awareness, zone coverage recognition, like not kind of running himself into leverage. Typical rookie receiver stuff that we see from these guys. But by the end of his rookie season, which unfortunately ended in week 7, like he didn't even have the chance to really ramp up in the back half like some of these guys do. He was smoking man coverage, man, especially on the, as you see on the screen here, like the big in breaking routes, which are, you highlighted this with Jacoby Myers, critical to the Liam Cohen offense, the digs, the overs, the posts. He was really open for a lot of big time targets there. And yeah, you can only imagine what he'd be doing in the back half of the season had he stayed healthy. The coaching staff has had a lot of time to think about that as well. And I think, Dave, that the dumbest thing that teams do, the biggest mistakes that they make, is thinking what happened last year will just automatically happen this year. Like, oh, well, Parker Washington was awesome. Like, Jacoby Myers is really good. Well, Jacoby Myers is going to be 30, right, at some point this year. He's an aging receiver on his third team. Parker Washington, I like Parker Washington, but what if that stretch at the end of the year was a blip? Like, you got to insulate yourself in some ways, and I think Hunter is a big part of that insulation. So, like, regardless of where you stand on Travis Hunter, you know, the fantasy commodity or whatever, like, he's going to be involved in this offensive situation, which, to your point, Dave, just makes it even more crowded between these four guys.
It does, but right now you can get this guy in round 13, and like we get so excited about rookies that show signs of life. His last game before that injury that happened in practice, he caught 8 of 14 targets for 101 yards and a touchdown. Like any rookie wide receiver, if they did that in their final game, there should be so much excitement going about him going into year two, and for whatever reason, there just isn't with Hunter. It is one of the most head-scratching things that I've seen in a long time playing fantasy football.
He's a weird just, I don't know, like lightning rod player on the internet. I think because he's trying to do something that like nobody's ever done before, which like, by the way, he might not pull off, right? Like to be a full-time player on both sides of the ball, it might be impossible. If you're betting on that he's going to be a major contributor on offense, to Dave's point, you don't have to pay very much in an ADP standpoint to figure that out. Now, let me give you kind of my nightmare pitch from a fantasy standpoint about this wide receiver room. And I kind of think this is where this is kind of how I'm going to approach it going into it. Like, this is what the situation is going to be. That, by the way, that doesn't mean that we don't draft any of these guys, because the analogy I'm going to make, I've actually taken a lot of stabs at this previous wide receiver room. I honestly think, Dave, this is going to end up looking a lot like the Green Bay Packers from the last few years. And what I mean by that is it's a very heavy rotation room. Like we're saying, especially if you believe that Brian Thomas Jr. can bounce back in year three, which I do believe, you know, to some degree, he can bounce back from what he was last year. Is he going to be the rookie year player that he was from a production standpoint? I don't know, but I do think he can bounce back and be like a positive contributor to this offense. Jacoby Myers is good. Like I said, I do believe in Parker Washington to some degree. Obviously, I'm a big Travis Hunter bro. Well, okay, so that's four wide receivers we think credibly should see the field. This is a team that still wants to run the ball at decent volume, right? Like they still want to have a pretty good ground game. That's a big part of Liam Cohen's offense. And oh, by the way, they drafted Nate Borkircher in the second round of this year's draft, signaling that they want to play a lot more heavy personnel packages. So a team that's going to run the ball at decent volume, a team that's not going to live out of 11 personnel, they're going to play some 12, some 13, et cetera. You might see a situation where, like last year, the Green Bay Packers' lead route participation player was Romeo Doubs at 74%. And I know there were injuries and things of that nature, but Matthew Golden was number two at 48%. I don't think it will look that dramatic in Jacksonville, but Dave, I could see that being the destination that we arrive at with this wide receiver room, which just kind of means that like nobody will be a true fantasy starter if that plays out.
And you know, my really boring milquetoast take for that Packers wide receiver room over the last few years was that they're all better in best ball. You never want to trust any of these guys in a managed yeah, lineup. Right. And I think I'm kind of okay just sprinkling all of these guys in best ball. But Travis Hunter is the one that jumps out to me as the best value, especially if you don't have to start him on a week in and week out basis. Draft him in round 13 when he has that game with 100 yards and a touchdown. You love it. And when he has a game where he is primarily on cornerback, you don't have to pull your hair out for starting him in a fantasy lineup. You drafted him as your wide receiver six in best ball.
Yeah, that's been my thing about Travis Hunter, is that if you just want to opt out of like Travis Hunter as a fantasy option because you don't want to deal with any of this stuff, like I actually don't really blame you. There's a lot of really good wide receivers in the NFL. We're going to talk about a lot of really good wide receivers in this show. I think this situation, and to be clear, Dave, this was your situation, obviously, that you brought here. I've said on the show, I'm like almost kind of tired of talking about the Jags wide receivers, but I think I've landed in a good spot with this, and that it's a situation to perfectly just throw your hands up. Like I can't imagine having it. It seems like you don't have one other than like Travis Hunter is a big value, certainly in best ball. Like I can't imagine having a strong feeling about any of these ancillary receivers. Cause like right now, just how can you possibly get an answer? Even like theoretically, Dave, I think heavy personnel packages, if there's going to be multiple tight ends on the field, like you kind of would just have the X on the field a lot, which is Brian Thomas Jr. But how can we realistically say like Brian Thomas is going to be that guy after the season that he had last year? There's just, it truly is no way of knowing.
Especially with his draft costs, you got to pay up for Brian Thomas Jr. And that's why I think Jacoby Myers, who's going like five rounds later, also, you know, whether it's just on his own accord or contingent upside due to injury, Jacoby Myers is another one that I'm happy to kind of sprinkle in. But I do find it a little bit difficult paying up for Brian Thomas Jr. and Parker Washington, given their costs.
Yeah, speaking of you know, who is going to be that like number one receiver on the field in the heavy personnel packages, we're going to have Nate Tice on the show next week. We're going to do a full tight end heavy personnel package show and like which wide receivers are going to benefit from that. So we will certainly be talking even more about these Jacksonville Jaguars wide receivers on that show. But let's actually stay in Jacksonville for my first question here, which I mentioned this team wants to have a pretty good run game, a robust package from a ground game perspective. And yet, Dave, like, how do we know and how will we possibly know who is the clear winner between Bashaile Touton and Chris Rodriguez? I know this is a little bit of a throwback kind of fantasy Twitter moment from a few months ago. I was honestly blown away that people had like real strong opinions about, oh no, this will definitely be this and this will definitely, how the hell could you possibly know that? You're truly grasping at straws with this. So Dave, I ask you, like, is there going to be a clear winner between Bashaile Touton versus Chris Rodriguez? And the secondary question to that is, how the hell could we possibly know that here in May?
Yeah, I don't think we can know. And this is one that I think is going to be very frustrating in season as well, when we'll see Touton get hot for a few weeks and Chris Rodriguez get hot for a few weeks. And I know it's our job to have takes. My take here is just that I think ADP kind of has this one right, because like there's a bull case for each of these guys. And if Bashaile Touton ends up being the guy, the ceiling for him is so much higher. I mean, this is a guy with off the charts athleticism. We've got 95th percentile relative athletic score, 100th percentile size adjusted speed. And then we saw him check some good boxes last year as a rookie as well. He was above average in yards after contact per attempt, above average in broken tackle rate. So he's also young. You know, there's that allure of the unknown with a 23-year-old. What can he be? I think the case for Chris Rodriguez is also very bullish, but I do worry about the upside here, where, you know, Bashaile Touton can be scoring touchdowns from 60, 70 yards out. That's not in Chris Rodriguez's wheelhouse. But I can't help but keep going back to that connection between Liam Cohen when he was the offensive coordinator at Kentucky and when he had Chris Rodriguez there. And he talked about him a lot, that he was kind of the engine that powered that offense. That was that Will Levis, Wandale Robinson offense at Kentucky. And when Liam Cohen had to go back to Kentucky his first year without Chris Rodriguez, I pulled a quote here where he said, I'm really going to miss being able to hand the ball off and, you know, get 4 yards. A lot of times that wasn't the scheme. That was Chris. And if you look at his metrics from last year, second in yards after contact per attempt, fourth in broken tackle rate, fifth in success rate, that's what he's good at doing, is keeping an offense on schedule. He just doesn't really have that really high-end upside with the breakaway runs that we care about in fantasy.
I think that's a great point about what Chris Rodriguez can bring to this team and how it might matter specifically for the 2026 Jacksonville Jaguars. As we mentioned, we think this passing game is going to be good with all of these variety of options and the way that they can run out all these different formations and things. They might be one of those teams that, and by the way, this is a good kind of point to say with a show like this, Dave, that people act as if we are trying to uncover these like predetermined outcomes, right? Like, oh, we just got to find the right clues. Like, look, see, here's what Facial Tootin said, or was this is what James Gladstone said about him pre-draft. So, like, this is gonna be Tootin's job. To what you just had, like, see what Lee Cohen thinks about Chris Rodriguez. Like, this is what if you uncover this clue here, this shows you it will really be this guy's job. But what might happen is that this team gets into camp, or as you mentioned, goes through September and says, like, hey, we're a really good passing game. We can find most of our explosive plays here. And again, this is a total hypothetical. We can find most of our explosive passing plays this way. What we don't need is a boom bust runner. We kind of need somebody just to keep that thing on schedule. And it's like, all right, well, this is Chris Rodriguez's job because he's a little bit better at doing that. Again, there's another alternate universe where Bashal Tootin's the guy, but I think that's why these backfield situations are so fascinating, because we act like there's some predetermined outcome. You know who doesn't even know right now? The Jacksonville Jaguars. They don't even really have a clear lean here.
Absolutely. And I also think that this is going to change on a week to week basis. Like, we've talked so much about Liam Cohen already in this show, you know, staying with Jacksonville. But if you look back to when he was the offensive coordinator in Tampa Bay, we saw spurts from Rashad White. We saw spurts from Sean Tucker. We saw spurts from Bucky Irving. So they didn't have one guy. They didn't say, this is what we want to do for the entire season. They really took a hot hand approach. So I think if Chris Rodriguez is running well, they can move the scales in his favor. And then who knows? Maybe he fumbles. Maybe he gets stuffed at the goal line. Then they go back to Bashal Tootin. I think this is a very fluid situation. I think the difference here, though, like I said, is that if Bashal Tootin hits, that could be a game breaker in fantasy, where he can be, you know, an RB1. If Chris Rodriguez hits, it's probably because he fell into the touchdown or into the end zone a dozen times. And that's kind of the out with Rodriguez, I think.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. Like, if you're trying to hit big, you definitely want to hit on a Bashal Tootin type of archetype here. Let's finally get out of Jacksonville here and let's go to a different team. Dave, what is your second pressing question we've got for the show?
Who is going to start at quarterback for the Raiders, and how is that going to impact the rest of this offense? This one, you know, we talk about this every year, right? When we have these rookies coming in that are highly drafted and we've got this bridge quarterback and everybody starts looking at the schedule, which is out by now, not for us, but somebody's going to be looking at the schedule before we record this show and say, like, you know, this looks like the time that we're going to see that switch after the bye, whatever it may be. And I really don't know what to make of this one. If I had to lean one way, looking at the influence that Tom Brady has on this offense, a very process-driven person, not a results-driven person, I kind of have a feeling that if they go into the season saying, we want a redshirt Mendoza this year, like, doesn't matter what happens, if they're sitting at 2-14, we might still see Kirk Cousins out there just because of who Tom Brady is. So I'm kind of leaning towards a potential red shirt season for Mendoza, but it's also really tough for front offices to stick with that plan when the fans get loud.
Right. That's, you can be a process driven person and you can be a, hey, we want to let this guy sit in May. That's a fun place to live. Shoot, that can even be fun in training camp, but everybody's benchable. Right. Like, this is what I always come back to at quarterback, especially when there's somebody interesting, you know, behind him. Like, let me tell you what, if they're trending towards a 2-14 season, they're going to want to see Fernando Mendoza. I listen, if Kirk Cousins has a rough training camp, a couple of weeks of we're getting beat reports, you know, rough day for Kirk, man. You know, would have been, if this was a live practice, we would have taken 5 sacks. We would have took a couple picks, but there's going to be a real drumbeat for Mendoza for sure. So I would be And again, who knows? This is the whole theme of the show is who the hell knows. I'd be stunned if we didn't see. Honestly, Dave, I think I'd be a little stunned if we didn't see Mendoza week one. I know that they're really pitching hard. I know that they're really pitching the Kirk Cousins thing hard. And I do give Kirk a lot of credit for the way that that Falcons offense actually played down the stretch when nobody was watching the Atlanta Falcons anymore. But I mean, it's like Kirk Cousins at this point in his career, like counting on him to consistently start games for this team, a team, by the way, that I think is interesting on offense, but does clearly have some holes, both along the offensive line and certainly in the wide receiver room. I'm curious if you have any strong takes on this wide receiver room. I just think at some point Kirk plays himself out of this job, and it could be in August that he plays his way out of this job.
Yeah, my strong take on this wide receiver room is that Brock Bowers might get 180 targets this year. So that tells you everything I need to tell you about this wide receiver room. But again, you know, I can't help but keep going back to the Tom Brady of it all. That like this guy, he has been hellbent on talking about how we are just destroying these young quarterbacks. And I had a quote from Liam Cohen. I've got quotes from Tom Brady too, where he says, "I think it is a tragedy that we are forcing these rookies to play early. I think it's best, in my opinion, for young quarterbacks or rookie quarterbacks to kind of sit back and watch a veteran do it." So when I see that, again, like that's the plan. But as you said, the fans, the beat reports, I'm already seeing the training camp clips come out where it's Kirk Cousins throwing a ball and Fernando Mendoza's throwing a ball and saying like, who do you think has more zip on that ball? So it's only a matter of time, but I do want to think that the Raiders, given, you know, Tom Brady calling the shots in that front office to some extent, I think that we might see Kirk Cousins playing a little bit deeper into the season than people realize. And I think he could also be a good fit in this, you know, play action, Clint Kubiak offense. I think this is kind of a sneaky good landing spot for Kirk Cousins.
So whether it's Kirk and whether it's Mendoza, does that really change what you think the offense will look like or which player you'd kind of want to be bullish on from a fantasy standpoint? Like, does it actually change anything from like a brass tacks perspective?
You know, it does change my just projections for the offense as a whole. I would get more excited with Kirk Cousins just because, like I said, I think this is a good fit. Also, Brock Bowers is the guy that I'm very in on in this offense. We saw Kirk Cousins just loves targeting the tight end. So I do worry that if Mendoza comes in there, you know, they just shorten up the playbook a little bit. We see a lot of quicker reads, still getting the ball to Brock Bowers, of course. But I think that as a whole for this offense, for fantasy purposes, we probably do want to see Cousins there more than we want to see Mendoza learning how to play at the NFL level.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think I'm a little more excited to see the rookie at this point, but I've certainly been a shiny object person at different points in my life. So that can certainly here's the thing, too. Like, I just think that either way with these two quarterbacks, Bowers is absolutely going to get his. Like, there will be a ton of designer plays. There's going to be a ton of shot plays to him that they open up from a scheme perspective. I think this wide receiver room is functional enough to be what it needs to be this year while Brock Bowers remains the center of the universe. Like, yeah, if this was a wide receiver room without Brock Bowers on the team, it would be a pretty big problem. Even if, like, I like some of these role players, I still have a good bit of hope for Jack Besh going into year two. I think Trey Tucker's a solid player. Jalen Naylor's a solid player. But again, it would be a disaster if they didn't have Bowers. Like, it's going to be a Bowers-centric passing game almost regardless of who is behind center. I actually think, Dave, it probably matters more for Ashton Jeanty, like the quarterback play and the output, as weird as that sounds, because we just know that this offense will have to not be like a bottom three unit for him to potentially find that level of statistical success. So I would actually argue that for him, it matters a lot who is behind center and what type of quality of play we're getting behind center.
Yeah. And we saw last year, Jeanty was still like a high end RB2 in a worst case scenario. So just like a little bit of a better offense here, and we can see him creep into that RB1 category. But again, like going back to Clint Kubiak, just what he does with his offense is, if you look every stop as an offensive coordinator, he has his one playmaker, and all of the role players are just there to kind of clear out space and allow that guy to catch the ball and create after the catch. We saw it with JSN last year. We saw it with Rashid Shaheed and Chris Olave before that, Brandon Ayuk before that, Justin Jefferson before that. And I think Brock Bowers is that guy now where, yeah, I'm with you. I like Jack Besh. I like Trey Tucker. Jalen Naylor is fun, but I think their roles are going to be a lot of deception to try to get Bowers out there open.
As it should be. I love to hear it. Okay, we are going to take our first quick break. When we come back, we're talking through more questions we'd like to have answered that we know we won't get answered. We'll get into that right after this. Mm-hmm. All right, we're back. We've got Dave Kluge. We've got questions that we want answered that we know we likely will not have answered anytime soon. And this one is a little bit more of like a rhetorical, if not just kind of theoretical question. It's my second one here, Dave. Are we completely missing the boat on the Packers wide receiver room changes? And what I mean by that is I mentioned it with the Jacksonville Jaguars wideouts, right? Like where I think this could be the next Green Bay Packers of like, it's a heavy rotation for guys in the mix. You know, we've got a bunch of dudes that are hovering around 50 to 60% route participation, AKA guys who are not viable fantasy football starters for us. Are the Packers no longer that wide receiver room? If you look at this thing on paper right now, Dave, it kind of looks like they just have three clear guys. They have Christian Watson, they have Jaden Reed, and they have Matthew Golden, and then they've got Savion Williams and Sky Moore, who's mostly a returner. I don't think, based on what we've seen so far, that, you know, like Savion Williams is ready to take on Dontavian Wicks's level of routes, or certainly like Sky Moore, even like Malik. Like I think these guys are going to be bit players. And so that's the way I'm thinking about it right now, in which case, like, oh man, so we're gonna have like three full-time wide receivers for an offense that over the last three seasons is fourth in EPA per play on average, like a very, very good offense. Are we missing the boat on that? Or Dave, is this still going to be a rotation because like that's what this team does? We really won't have an answer to that question.
No, I think this is going to be a radically different Packers offense. And I'm so glad that you brought this one up because I think that for the last couple of years, they had a lot of question marks about the receivers in the offense. And I think they got the answers that they were looking for last year. Christian Watson, former second round pick, game breaking speed. You know, the athleticism was there, but the refinement wasn't. And last year we saw him expand his route tree. We saw him running more than just verts. He became this kind of all over the field type of receiver. Answers that question. Jaden Reed, the big question for the longest time, can he do anything besides play out of the slot? Well, when he came back from injury, he played over 30% of his snaps out wide in over half of the games between then and the rest of the season. So now we've got versatility with Christian Watson. We've got versatility with Jaden Reed and then Matthew Golden. Yes, I think that they still have a lot of questions about Matthew Golden. Right. But if there is a bit of silver lining to take away from Matthew Golden's rookie season, it's that he played multiple roles. Now, he wasn't great at any of them, but they asked him in certain games to fill in for certain roles in the offense. So he could play the downfield guy. He could play the manufactured touches at the line of scrimmage guy. He could play in the slot. He can play out wide. So now I think they have three receivers that they can kind of move all over the formation. I don't think they had that before. And that's why everyone was kind of pigeonholed into just doing their one thing. And now with Dobbs out of the picture, with Wicks out of the picture, I think they do have this kind of fun, versatile trio. And I find myself drafting a lot of Christian Watson and a lot of Jaden Reed. Matthew Golden, I kind of want to see it before I make any investments there.
Yeah, I was going to say when you're rolling through about like, oh, they feel like they got their questions answered. I was like, I can't wait to see what he's going to say about Matthew Golden. Like, what was the question answered there? Because Matthew Golden is a guy that I do not have a strong take about whatsoever. Like, honestly, I just think going back, obviously, statistically, he had one of those rookie seasons that is a massive, massive red flag. Like, this guy has, you know, this much opportunity on it. He comes away with 29 catches, no touchdowns. I know he had a nice couple of plays in the playoff game against the Bears, but again, that's obviously like it was a couple of nice plays. I wouldn't say that it was great. And then you know, statistically, it's that. But then on film, it'd be one thing. It was like, oh, no, I can tell you this guy was playing pretty good and he just wasn't getting the production. I thought the film was okay. You know, reception perception year one data was some bad, some solid, you know, so just again, kind of a profile that I don't really want to put a flag plan on is essentially where I'm at with Matthew Golden. And I don't have a strong take one way or another on him, but the other two guys, we honestly sound like we're in lockstep here, Dave, where I really am a big fan of what I saw out of Christian Watson last year. And I've been a longtime Christian Watson skeptic, but I thought one of the shockers of last season was that he came back. Like, I didn't even know if he was going to play because he tore his ACL in January of the same calendar year.
Yeah.
He comes back and plays the best football of his career. And I don't even think it's close. I've always been a huge Jaden Reed fan. I would love to see Jaden Reed used as a Z receiver in two receiver sets. I like that outside stat that you brought here. That certainly gives me some hopium that I could potentially see a little bit about this year. So I guarantee you, Dave, that if we put this segment out on Twitter, people are going to reply like you're falling for it again. It's the Packers wide receiver room. You don't want to invest in it, but it seems like there could be a little bit of a changing of the tide here.
Absolutely. And with Matthew Golden, too, I'm going to drop another Sigmund Bloomism here. I mean, he's been doing this for a long time. He's got a lot of good mantras. And he talks about how teams have a DNA, right? Like, you can change the coaches and the players and the front office, but these teams just have their DNA. And the DNA in Green Bay is that rookie wide receivers always stink. And then they come on in year two. We saw it with Davante Adams. We saw it with Randall Cobb. Fair. We saw it with Christian Watson. So, yes, everything analytically says you should be out. Romeo Doubs as well. Yeah. So like everything analytically says that Matthew Golden is just a bust at this point. But if there's one franchise that I'm willing to bet on after a rookie faceplants, it's a Packers wide receiver. So, I mean, I want to see it. I'm not drafting Golden, yeah. But if he does have a breakout season, it wouldn't surprise me just because this is what we have seen happen in Green Bay time and time again.
Yeah. One of my folks in the Discord had a really good point the other day. It was from Adam. He mentioned exactly what you mentioned, that they kind of had him play multiple different roles last year. And Adam's point was that that wasn't really the plan. I think he actually, you mentioned the manufactured touch stuff. I don't think they ever intended him to kind of take on some of the Jaden Reed touches of like manufactured stuff, yards after catch. Cause like, that's not really, Matthew Golden should be kind of like a speed off-ball perimeter receiver where he's doing a lot of these big breaking routes, which he did at Texas. And there, again, some flashes of him doing that in isolation last year. I would not say it was consistent, but you can also kind of make the case if you're a Matthew Golden bro, like, he was kind of thrown asunder by that. Like, if he'd just been in the role they intended him to and like Reed was healthy. Now, they knew Reed wasn't going to be healthy from like training camp because he had that foot injury and then busted his collarbone. So maybe that's not a great excuse, but I think that's what the story you'd have to tell yourself is that Matthew Golden got overloaded last year, and actually by scaling him back and putting him in a clear role, I think maybe that could be the case. I'll tell you what, you don't have to pay much from a cost perspective. Like, dynasty is a different discussion, but a redraft standpoint, like, getting Matthew Golden at this point, he's on the board like outside the top 40 receivers. So you really don't have to make much of a payment to get him on your roster.
Yeah, right now he's getting drafted as the wide receiver 47, which is just, I mean, kind of crazy for anybody that was drafted in round one. And then also, we didn't even mention the Tucker Kraft of it. Like, that also forced Matthew Golden into this kind of short target role as well, because they had Reed and Kraft both doing that. They lose both of them, and then they're like, all right, well, Matthew Golden, everything that you practice in training camp this year, forget all of that. You're in a new role now.
Yeah, man. This Packers wide receiver room really interesting this year. If it's going to be just those three guys, there's going to be one, if not two, just like major values from this. And as a pretty big, longtime Jaden Reed fan and desperately wanting him to break out of like what I would call the Curtis Samuel, Matt Harmon, fell for it again world, I would love to see Jaden Reed break out of that this year. So that's probably where I'll be putting most of my chips. Dave, let's get to your third pressing question here.
All right, this one, David Montgomery in Houston. I want to know, because we have seen Joe Mixon in this offense was just like 100 yards and a touchdown almost every single week, look great. And then we get that excitement going into the next year when they bring in Nick Chubb and we say, we see the blueprint. This is what the Texans are going to do. They're going to bring in these aging running backs, run them into the ground, and they're going to be RB1s. So my question with David Montgomery, is he going to be more Joe Mixon or is he going to be more Nick Chubb in this offense? What do you think, Matt?
God, better than Nick Chubb, I'll tell you that. Funny thing about this is that, like, even when Mixon was popping off from a statistical perspective, this run game still stunk, you know. Like, fantasy wise obviously the numbers were there, but I bring up this stat all the time. They were 31st in rushing success rate since they've drafted CJ Stroud. This is like that's a big part of the Stroud struggles, is they're just consistently behind the sticks. And I was talking about this with Joel Smith on the earlier episode this week. He is a guy that David Montgomery, that is, that just keeps you on schedule, right? So I think Montgomery's a good fit in there. I just wonder, Dave, like, is there really that? And again, maybe you're going to push back on me on this because of the Joe Mixon example. I just feel like Montgomery is one of those guys that if he hits, he is drafted as running back 21 and he's running back 15, you know, like, and there's a place for that guy in fantasy. I'm not one of the folks that subscribe to like every pick of yours should just be all upside based. You know, smarter people than me certainly do subscribe to that theory. I don't necessarily think it always has to go that way, but that would just be kind of my pushback to drafting Dave Montgomery aggressively. But do you see like a path to a greater ceiling there?
I do, just because I think it's a volume-based ceiling, just like Joe Mixon. Like you said, it wasn't pretty with Joe Mixon, but the production was there, and I could see David Montgomery. We have seen this guy throughout his NFL career can handle 25 touches a game. I don't think Woody Marks is any threat to take goal line touches for him. So I think that, you know, it might not be pretty, but he can average 20 to 25 touches per game. He can get double-digit touchdowns at the end of the season. I feel like we have kind of jumped the shark with the dead zone narrative, and don't get me wrong, like, every dead zone red flag is hanging on David Montgomery right now. He has all of the telltale signs of a dead zone running back, but every single year I try to parse through that dead zone and see if there's one guy I can find that I think might be able to resurrect himself from there. And I think David Montgomery is just a good fit. You know, he still is a guy who has a pretty solid efficiency profile. He also doesn't have the wear and tear that Nick Chubb had on him, isn't coming back from the injury like Nick Chubb was. So if you look, you know, he's really been relegated to a secondary role over the last couple of years as Jahmyr Gibbs, his role grew in Detroit. So I think there's still tread on the tires here. I think there's still an opportunity for him to step in and just volume his way, even if it is a little bit ugly, into a high-end wide receiver two or running back two, maybe even a back-end RB1 finish at the end of the year.
Well, I think then the follow-up question to that is, where are you at with this Texans offense as a whole? We're showing it on the screen here. Like, where are you at with the CJ Stroud experience? I've kind of made my feelings known on the show. If you haven't listened, like, I keep bringing up that he was actually a top 10 quarterback in EPA per play last year, sandwiched between Sam Darnold and Patrick Mahomes. I'm pretty bullish on what this receiver room could look like. Obviously the O-line is a question, but where are you, Dave, from this offensive ecosystem perspective? Like, is this a situation where a running back could come in here and have that level of production?
You know, the big questions, of course, are the offensive line. They've got a rookie in there and then two aging veterans. So they at least tried. Mm-hmm. And I want to see that. Like, they're putting in the effort to improve the offensive line. And I think what they did last year, you know, Jaden Higgins, we saw some flashes here and there, but I'm still holding on to some hope for Jalen Knoll. He was a guy that I really liked well. So I think making the investments in pass catchers last year, making the offensive line investments this year, I think they're doing the right thing to get CJ Stroud back on schedule. And I agree with you. I think that he was much better than the numbers actually showed. It was just the offensive line. And you talk about how bad the run game was, playing behind the sticks constantly. He was kind of in a situation that I don't think anybody would have succeeded in. So I am very in on Nico Collins. I don't know how you aren't. I mean, I've kind of jokingly said that, like, if I'm in a redraft league that allows trades, I want to trade back into round two, because I feel like there's just as good of talent in round two when you can get Brock Bowers and Nico Collins and Drake London and some of these other guys. So big fan of Nico Collins. I'm betting on Jaden Higgins to take a step forward now with Christian Kirk out of the picture. And then Dalton Schultz also, like, quietly had a really good year, got off to a slow start, but was just pulling targets the entire rest of the season. So this is an offense that I was very in on rookie CJ Stroud's rookie season. And now I think that the excitement has kind of cooled off. There's reason to buy back in going into 2026.
Yeah, I can really tell myself a story about a lot of these offensive pieces here and just everything that's kind of going on. And I think I just continue to come back to this, that I think the comments that you get about the Texans offense and all the way from Nico Collins to any of these young receivers is, it's about Stroud. And I just think that the last thing that we saw of Stroud is over indexing a lot of negativity on him as a player. I think he is, you know, you can talk about where he is from a ceiling perspective. I think that there is enough from him to, like, get multiple pass catchers activated and everything here. So I don't really know how I feel about Nick Cayley. I don't really know how all the variables come together, but there's at least, like, a picture here I can squint at and come together at a pretty solid offense. So I'm with you on a lot of the optimism for some of these players.
You know, you mentioned Nick Cayley, and I think that that is something worth noting as well. Nick Cayley was a part of that Rams offense when they really switched to that very heavy bell cow usage with Kyren Williams. So that's the last little thing that can get me excited about David Montgomery. And then this, totally anecdotal, and I might lose some people here, but you have seen some guys when they switch teams don't do well, and then you see other guys when they switch teams get very, like, invigorated and they want to prove that they were better than they were used. And David Montgomery does strike me as that kind of emotional type of player that is going to put a good season on tape, just because he was very open about his frustrations in Detroit and the lack of usage there. So again, might be totally big brain to myself telling myself a story here, but I think Montgomery is going to want to prove that he should have been used more in Detroit.
Your 2 points that you made there, the Nick Cayley one's the Nick Cayley one is good in theory, but as somebody that was like, hey, Nick Cayley brought, he's gonna bring some stuff for the Rams, and I felt it was all, like, from his Patriots background, and maybe like maybe 90% from his Patriots background, 10% from the Rams. I was very disappointed in that last year. So I've got a little bit of scar tissue with that. I will say, though, your Dave Montgomery point, whether it's anecdotal and people hate it or not, is 1,000% spot on. This is a guy, I like my interview with David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs from a couple of Super Bowls ago. I always stands out to me that he was like, I don't like when people compare us or put us together. Like we're equals in this backfield. We are a duo where people are always trying to say like, who's better than the other. No, like we're equals in this backfield. Like, don't call me a power back, any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then the next season, essentially, Dan Campbell just goes away from this guy and makes it all about Jahmyr Gibbs. You got to think he is wearing a major chip on his shoulder. So, again, whether you subscribe to that analysis or not and think that moves the needle, I will 100% confirm, Dave, your point that, like, he is going to be feeling that way. I'd be shocked if he's not wearing that chip on the shoulder right now. All right, my third one here before we get to break, is Jaxson Dart good? And how good can he be? And this is truly a question I do not have a strong take on either. I'm curious where you're at on Jaxson Dart. I like a lot of what I've seen from Dart so far, of course, but I think he's somebody who there's a lot hinging on his just like how good is he going to be? Because I think you can look at this offense and put together a pretty interesting, you know, the Matt Nagy of it all is tough. But other than that, like, I think they've got some interesting players on the roster, you know, some pieces put around him. Dart himself is somebody who could be a really good fantasy football quarterback. There's also a side question to this one that I want to ask, and that is, when is Malik Nabers going to be Malik Nabers? Is this the guy that's going to be on the field in week one? And if he's on the field in week one, what is he going to be himself? And if he's not, when will he be himself? Again, truly an unanswerable question, which is the point of the show. Good report today from Dan Duggan of The Athletic. Giants wide receiver Malik Nabers underwent a second surgery on his knee to remove scar tissue that was causing stiffness, according to sources. I'm told the second surgery took place, quote, multiple weeks ago, and it was described as a, quote, cleanup. A second surgery isn't expected to impact Nabers' recovery timeline. The team is still hoping the number one wide receiver will be ready for the opener. Nabers first underwent ACL meniscus surgery on October 28th. Okay, a lot of like hope. Don't worry, it's not going to affect the recovery timeline. And Nabers is a guy who's being drafted as the 17th overall player. And I just feel like this injury situation and the kind of murkiness of it maybe hasn't been discussed enough so far.
Yeah, and I think that report, they're like very intentionally trying to calm concerns, because when I see a second procedure had to be performed, that doesn't typically give me the warm and fuzzies. Like, that's not something I feel good about. No. But they're kind of saying that this is going to help his recovery, that he's going to feel better. So I don't know. There might be a little agent water carrying in that one. I don't know. I don't want to speak too much, but I don't like the idea that there is a second surgery here. But back to Jaxson Dart, the first question that you initially asked, this is one that I think I do have a strong take on, and I love Jaxson Dart. Now, the question you asked is like, okay, is he good? I think that is a gray area question. I don't know if he's good or not, but I do know that he's not going to have any competition this year. And if you look at this profile of quarterback, a guy who rushes the way that he does, it is a very good bet in fantasy. So Dynasty, do you want to put all your chips in on Jaxson Dart? I don't know, but in redraft, I think this is one of the best values out there right now. Just because if you look at what Harbaugh is doing, I mean, he is trying to copy the blueprint that they found success with in Baltimore. Of course, he brought Isaiah Likely in. He brought Pat Ricard in. I think we're going to be looking at a lot of jumbo sets, multiple tight ends, full-time fullback, lots of rushing, lots of RPO, and a lot of designed rushing for Jaxson Dart. So Dart was awesome last year. I mean, we saw he was the per-game QB8 from the time that he took over as a starter. 18-plus points in 10 of his 12 starts. So I think if they're going to lean into that, just like continuing to utilize him as a rusher, even if he's not good, like the EPA per dropback might not be great, but I think the fantasy production is going to be there regardless.
Yeah, that's my thing. Is I'm pretty confident he's going to be a good fantasy quarterback. I'm right. Just curious how good is he going to be from like a, can he lift some boats along with him with the tide? I mean, we've really never seen him and Nabers play together. You know, Nabers got hurt in his first start against the Chargers. So obviously we view Nabers as a quarterback proof player. I don't really actually view any wide receiver as quarterback proof, to be honest with you. I think that like certain guys in certain offenses with Like, we always, well, this guy's got a bad quarterback. Bad quarterback's like a sliding scale, right? And it's got kind of funny. Like, whoa, we've seen neighbors produce with bad quarterbacks. Well, the bad quarterback that he produced with is the guy who, in the first 8 weeks of last season, led the Colts to one of the best offenses in the NFL. So was it really that bad? I mean, again, you're kind of doing one of these brain pretzels with yourself there. Generally, I think
Justin Jefferson's 2025 season means that we have to retire the term quarterback proof forever.
Right, exactly. And even that's like, well, he's at least got himself to 1,000 yards and everything, you know, by hook and by crook. They kind of really forced that one in there. But yes, no player is truly quarterback proof. You just never know, right? And again, styles and fits and everything, that's a part of it. But yeah, so we've never seen him and neighbors together, really. And then some of these ancillary pass catchers are interesting to me. I'm curious if you have a strong take on any of these guys. I do want to bring up kind of some anecdotes about Malachi Fields, and I don't know where you stood about Fields as a prospect. I kind of liked a little bit of what I saw from him, but obviously would recognize some of the limitations from him. John Harbaugh loves this guy. Like, John Harbaugh reportedly, I believe, if I've got this right, reportedly, like, right after they drafted Francis Mauinoa at their second first round pick, he was immediately like, all right, now we can start talking about how we're going to trade up for Malachi Fields with Joe Shane. That was part of it. And then secondly, when they did draft Malachi Fields, they did indeed trade some coveted 2027 first round picks to get Fields. And then when they did draft, he's literally on the phone with Malachi Fields being like, yeah, see, we said God was going to put this together. Like, John Harbaugh, you know, a man of faith. Yeah, he's invoking God in the drafting of Malachi Fields. So I'll tell you what, John Harbaugh is high on Malachi Fields. And the way they've talked about him is this guy who might be like more of a jumbo slot type player for them, can get involved in the run game. I think he's going to be on the field a lot as a rookie. So his outlook matters a lot when we're talking about like how good Jackson Dart can be.
Yeah. And I think my fear is when we start looking at the secondary pieces in this offense, like, I'm pretty confident that if Jackson Dart is asked to step back and throw the ball to Malik Nabers, he can do that. I worry a lot about Jackson Dart getting to his second, third, fourth read. I mean, we saw at Ole Miss, just drop back, get the ball to Trey Harris. That was pretty much all he did there. And I think that there's going to be a lot of drop back, get the ball to Malik Nabers as well. So Malachi Fields, I think that he's a very good football player. I worry about the fantasy relevance here. So much of what he did at Notre Dame,
yeah,
in this very kind of similar offense, like a lot of jumbo sets, a lot of heavy packages, a run first offense. He was asked to run a lot of clear out routes. He was asked to block a lot. And he was really good at doing those two things. But I just can't envision a world where Malachi Fields is on the same field as Malik Nabers and is getting enough volume to have any sort of relevance in fantasy.
Yeah, he might be more of like a sacrificial X type player that's good for the Giants, but not necessarily great from a fantasy standpoint. But just again, the capital that they gave up to get Malachi Fields, they sent the 105th overall pick in the fourth rounder this year, a fifth rounder this year, and a 2027 fourth round pick for Fields. So they did really want to grab the guy, and I think they have a clear vision for him. And again, I could tell myself all these little stories, Dave, about, oh, this Giants offense, everything. You know this as a Bears fan. It's still Matt Nagy pulling the controls here, and that part of it, it's going to be tough for me to get past that in particular. We are going to talk Bears in our next topic, but before we do that, we are going to take another quick break here. When we come back, we've got a Bears topic. You know, I love talking about those Bears wide receivers. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. Dave teased it on the other side of the break. Got a Bears related topic. Hit us with it.
Was Roma Dunze's late season fall off more about his injury or more of a symptom of these teammate rookie breakouts? This is one, like, I wish I had the answer here, Matt. And as one of the wide receiver whisperers in the industry, I'm very excited to get your take on this one, because to start the year, Roma Dunze, it looks like the breakout was here. Like, he was just doing everything that we hoped he would be when he was drafted, and then picks up this foot injury, misses some games, never really finds his footing after that. DJ Moore gets more involved, Colson Loveland and Luther Burden breakout, and now I'm kind of sitting here looking at Roma Dunze saying, is what we saw in the first month and a half of the season what we should expect going forward, or is what we saw late in the year kind of what to expect? And truthfully, I don't have a strong take here. So I really am interested to see what you have to say about this one.
Yes, and obviously I love Roman Dunze, and I'm really excited about this entire offense in Chicago. So take that obviously with a grain of salt. Now, my just entire thought process here is that I think it is a little bit of both. Like I think the reality here is that there are both, and I would say it's probably like a Dunze's individual fall off, I think is probably like 75% injury based, just in terms of like the lack of. Just the way, like the lack of involvement in the offense as well. And this comes from talking to him after the season. And his point was, it was almost less about like the physical decline on the, like in terms of, oh, I can't do this or I can't do that, right? Like I unable to separate or any of that stuff. It was less about that and more about the like on and off in terms of managing the injury from a practice standpoint. And I think this does track when you think about who Ben Johnson is. Ben Johnson obviously is a very detailed coach. Again, this is something that when Rome has been on the show, he's talked a lot about like the details of this offense and everything that Ben Johnson commands and that. So I think you kind of fall out in that way, like the rhythm of the season of like, all right, I'm finding my role here. I need to be at these breaks and everything. So I think that's part of it. Also just the chemistry with Caleb Williams. Like you could tell that those guys went from being so on the same page at the beginning of the season. I know I don't have to tell you this, Dave, watching this team, to then at the end of the season, like, you know, there are times when like the ball's like placed here and it falls off Rome's hands and like he's not adjusting to it the right way or Caleb's putting it in a weird spot. I just think those guys from a reps and a timing and rhythm standpoint really fell off because of that injury. So it's less about like that he wasn't physically the same player. And of course you're not physically going to be the same player when you're managing a frigging foot stress fracture and everything like that. That's like part of it. But I think the bigger part of like the other guys emerging and him kind of falling out of like the offensive rotation a little bit was because of that. But I don't think that means it has to be that way going forward if he's healthy. And I to me, like, I think there's enough room for Odunze, Burden, and Loveland to all, you know, relatively cook here. I don't think Odunze has fallen behind those two guys. I think there's enough room for all three of these guys to be really impactful here. Do you agree or disagree?
I do agree. If I had to bet on the ceiling outcome, you know, I'm allured by Luther Burden. I think that he is just such a good fit in this Ben Johnson offense. And I think that's it. Like there are different levels of separation and getting open. And I know that you chart this, Matt, and you do a great job doing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, these NFL windows are so tiny that like you could just flash open for half a second and that's technically getting open. Ben Johnson, though, I don't know if he sees that as getting open. Like he wants his guys more on an island. And he has talked about that multiple times, whether he was an offensive coordinator in Detroit or during his time as a coach in Chicago, where he says, I don't want to throw up 50-50 balls. I want my guys to be open. And that worries me a little bit that we could be looking, again, to steal some of your vernacular here, a sacrificial X type of role for Odunze. I think that is in the range of outcomes. And that's what worries me a little bit. Because if you look at the time in Detroit, DJ Chark, Allen Robinson, Tim Patrick, Josh Reynolds, they had some talented big-bodied X receivers, but they sure as heck weren't getting targeted. They were just opening stuff underneath to get the ball to Amon-Ra St. Brown and to get the ball to Laporta. So I think that's kind of the downside here with the Odunze. I mean, the upside is obvious. This is a top 10 pick, just a freak athlete. You know, the upside is there, but I think the downside is that he is just running a lot of clear out routes, and I don't think that's really baked into his ADP.
I think that's I do think that's possible. Like I wouldn't say there's a 0% chance of that happening, but I would also say too that like usually the sacrificial guy in this offense is actually, and again we have him on the screen here, he was actually in Detroit with Ben Johnson, is like the Khalif Raymond type of player. You know, they drafted like Xavier Thomas this year to do like the speed, like true like move around stuff and rip open windows in that way. My guess is that that ends up being like the clear out player, because if you look at the way they used Odunze at the beginning of the year, he wasn't really like an X receiver. I think that's kind of the misnomer that I see happen most often with the Burden versus Odunze discourse. Like, oh, Burden is the slot guy and Odunze is the X. I mean, Burden is more of a movement Z receiver, which, by the way, like that, there's no question that that role is going to get you a ton of really efficient targets. Like, I think Luther Burden could be a little bit more Jameson Williams-esque than like Amon-Ra St. Brown-esque if we're doing the Detroit comparisons, if we're talking about like the big in-breaking routes and create after the catch in that way. There's no question that's going to be a valuable role. But for Odunze, too, like he wasn't just an outside on-ball player when he was really productive at the beginning of the year. So my guess is that we see both of these guys get reps off ball. We see both of these guys get reps in the slot, and that the sacrificial player of the offense is a little, I mean, it's funny, like last year was 100% DJ Moore. I mean, he had to be the most expensive sacrificial player I've seen in a long time, Dave. Like, this guy's getting paid over $20 million a year. And there's times I'm like, there's 10 dudes running the offense and one guy just out there clearing stuff out. And he occasionally made some big plays while doing that, but that was kind of obviously a very inefficient role. So I think it's just gonna be really interesting. Like, there's no answer to this either. Like, this is the point of the show, right? Like, we're not going to know this from camp reports or anything like that. It'll pretty much be like the big reveal in week one is what these two receivers look like. So do you, again, like, just last answer on this, do you have any real, like, no, this is the guy I'm taking, this is the guy I'm avoiding?
You know, I kind of want to take shots on all of these guys because this is one that's just like so unknown that I know whoever it is, whether it's Adunze, Burden, or Loveland, who we just kind of glossed over, like whoever the top target is on this team is going to be wildly valuable for fantasy. So I don't find myself stacking them up a lot. Like, I don't want to have a team where I have multiple Bears players, but sickos like us who are drafting hundreds of teams throughout the offseason, I kind of want to have a little dash of all of these guys and just hope that it breaks in the right way.
Yeah, I think that's the right answer. To me, it's always been, which Bears skill position player do you want to draft? Yes, draft him. Draft them all. Get a little bit of them and get some Caleb Williams too, because I'm excited about this offense here in year two of the Ben Johnson experience. All right, that's going to do it for us on the Yahoo Sports Network. However, we are going to continue the conversation on YouTube, on the podcast feed. So stay with us and we will see you on the other side. All right, we're back. I've got my fourth question here, and this is another quarter. Actually, both my last two ones are quarterback-related ones, so I'll rip into this one here, but it's got wide kind of ramifications on this. Dave, is Bryce Young going to be any better than he's been to date in the NFL? And I like Bryce Young. As he seems like a great guy. He, you know, he's had moments in the NFL. There's no question he's had moments in the NFL. And I actually, by the way, think it's totally okay to move the goalposts on players. I get this with like Marvin Harrison Jr. It's like, well, you're moving the goalposts on him. I'm like, yeah, no kidding. I'm moving the goalposts on him because I've seen what he's been in the NFL now. And like, I want him just get to like a good starting receiver that can be productive. I don't care about him being the prospect I ranked him as coming into the league. I do think at the same time, though, people have really moved the goalposts on Bryce Young to the point that's like, well, if he just shows anything, like, yeah, good decision to maybe extend him. I mean, let's just be honest for a second about what Bryce has been since he's come to the NFL. He ranked 34th out of 42 qualifying quarterbacks that have taken over 500 plus snaps in EPA per play since he came to the NFL in 2023. Even last year, where I do think he was a better player than certainly what he was as a rookie. Maybe not didn't run quite as hot throughout the course of the season on downfield passes in particular, but still was a better version generally of what he's been. 27th out of 34 quarterbacks that took over 300 snaps last year in EPA per play. So, Dave, if you are taking Tedrone McMillan as the wide receiver 15 off the board, which is where he is in consensus ADP right now, if you're, you know, like me, a Jalen Coker bro, but like you think he's going to be good, or like you're into Chris Brazel, you know, all this other, this is kind of a little bit of a, I wouldn't call it a totally crowded room, but they've got more options than they did at the beginning of Tedrone McMillan's rookie season. That is for sure. I think you've got to be expecting some level of improvement on Bryce Young as a quarterback. Are you expecting any level of improvement on Bryce Young? Where are you at with the Bryce Young experience?
Well, if there's a silver lining here, he has improved every year in the league. He was like the worst quarterback his rookie season. He was like a bottom five in year two. And last year he was like a bottom 10 quarterback. So trending up. I mean,
all right, we're going
he's
to the
on
right
a trajectory.
Direction.
He could be league average this year if he continues this trajectory is what I'm getting at. But I think the biggest problem here, yeah, there's limitations with Bryce Young, of course. But really, it's the play calling. Like Dave Canales, they could be down two scores in the third quarter, and he's still out there trying to establish the run. They were top or bottom five in pass rate over expectation last year. We only saw, so on average last year, teams had five plus games where they threw the ball more than 35 times. The Panthers only did it twice. And in those two games, Bryce Young was great in fantasy. 328 yards and three touchdowns, 448 yards and three touchdowns. So I still feel like there is this upside, and it might not be efficient play. It might not be great quarterback play, But if they are forced to throw the ball, he can at least pad the stats a little bit. So the problem is they have a good defense, and they want to run the ball a lot. So we don't see these situations. Yeah, we don't see these situations all that often where they have to put the air in the ball. So, you know, it's going to be a bumpy ride, I think, for Tetteroe McMillan. But every now and then when they're forced to air it out, like, he is the guy who can walk out of a game with 16 targets.
Yeah, and Dave Canales obviously gave the play calling to Brad Idzik, but him and Brad and Dave have been together for a long, long time. Like, I'm not expecting there might be some wrinkles that change, and maybe Brad is even better at the in-game stuff and everything. But philosophically, I think they'll be along the same line there. I don't expect a big separation from that standpoint. But I think what's really interesting about this team too, Dave, and I've talked about this on Reception Perception a good bit. I think that there's a chance this team, as everybody else is getting really big and heavy, and they have a big ass wide receiver room. There's no question about that. They've got some real tall dudes, and then the shortest quarterback in the league. But I mean, for the most part, like, all these teams are bringing these big, heavy, condensed bodies, tight ends, and all that. I think this team could go like four wide. I think they could go empty a ton with T-Mac, with Coker, with Leggett, with Brazzle. You know, get like one tight end moving around there. Tommy Tremble, Jatavion Sanders, whatever. And Bryce Young actually was really, really efficient in 2024 out of empty. 96 attempts out of empty in 2024 and over 11 yards per completion, which really blows away his career average, which is under 10. And he had 96 attempts out of empty in 2024. He had 88 last year. And he was benched in 2024. So it just goes to show you how they kind of had to go away from that. I wonder if they lean more into that this year, which is probably good for Bryce Young. I think it's more along to get, like what you're saying, that average level of quarterback play out of him. But we also see when teams spread the field, typically one wide receiver doesn't dominate targets as much as when they do get those heavy and condensed sets in. So Carolina is one of those teams that I am really fascinated, Dave, along the kind of thought process of the exercise here. I don't know the answer to any of these questions, but I'm pretty fascinated to watch them in September and kind of find out what it looks like.
Yeah, I think the one thing, and I see him here on the depth chart graphic that you guys have, can't talk about Carolina without talking about Jonathan Brooks. I mean, I know we're talking about the passing game here, but that's a guy that I found myself really drafting aggressively, letting Rico Dowdle walk. We didn't really see anything from Trevor Etienne last year, so I think that the path is there for him to really step up. But I love that stat that you have about Bryce Young playing out of empty packages, and it makes a lot of sense because that is his best trait, is being able to process and find that open guy. So when you're asking him to turn his back to the defense and run play action and jumbo sets, that's not something that's going to benefit him. He wants to see that whole field. He wants to find the open guy and get it to him. So hopefully Dave Canales is listening to the show right now and says, hey, good idea, Matt. Let me run some more five wide receiver sets next year.
Oh, I guarantee you Dave knows about this. No, I don't listen to the show, but I guarantee you he knows about this part of it. And it's just a really interesting push-pull of what I don't know that Canales wants to live in that world, but I kind of think the quarterback needs to live in that world. And it's just like a very interesting push-pull dynamic of how they manage this. And there's, like I said, a lot of fascinating pass catchers on this team now, especially Coker and Tetteroe McMillan. Speaking of fascinating pass catchers, Dave, your fifth and final question centers around some playmakers for a team that usually is among one of the best offenses in the NFL.
And, you know, I don't even know how I worded this question to you, Matt. I kind of just said, like, I want to talk about the San Francisco 49ers because there are so many questions here. I mean, we've got Christian McCaffrey, coming off of a huge year where he was very inefficient and just kind of operated as their safety valve receiver and was able to be good in fantasy because of it. You got Kittle coming back from the Achilles. You got a 33-year-old Mike Evans, who I'm not sure is the best scheme fit here. You've got Pearsall coming off of his injuries. We've got DeJuan Stribling in the mix. Brandon Ayuk and Juwan Jennings are gone. There are just so many moving pieces in this offense that every single year we just want to buy into the 49ers. Just blindly, we think they're going to be a good offense. This is the first year where I'm starting to look at the pieces and question that a little bit and wondering, should we still be buying into the 49ers offense?
Oh, man. And I think that means you're a more mature person than I am. Because I look at this and think, man, if everything goes right, if everybody's hamstrings stay attached, this could be pretty sick. Okay. Like I look at this the other way and think, man, there's a lot of talent on this roster. I actually love Mike Evans's fit as the X receiver in a Shanahan offense. A lot of digs, slants, crossers, the routes that he's low key been crushing it on the last few years. I think, but of course, obviously age, injuries. And same with McCaffrey, like still a dynamic receiving weapon. Age, injuries. George Kittle coming off of the injury. I get that. Ricky Pearsall. I think Ricky Pearsall could absolutely cook as the movement player. Mm-hmm. Knee injuries. The whole, this is like even Christian Kirk, who's on this team. Christian Kirk averaged 0.86 yards per route run last year. And I obviously they liked playing him over Jalen Noll, but he averaged 0.86 yards per out run last year. Like what's Christian Kirk got left at this point? I don't know if you have a strong DeJuan Stribling take. I didn't think he'd be the 33rd overall pick, but I really do like his fit in the offense. I think he could be really interesting. So I'm just, again, somebody that has been fooled a lot by these, you know, glasses or like these glass houses, these, you know, castles built on the sand. And that is, I think I'm falling for the Niners here a little bit. So you need to actually talk me off the ledge on this.
I mean, I think I did already. Like, I could see the best case scenario here is that the substation doesn't affect everybody and everybody's healthy and they win a Super Bowl. But my goodness, you just look at it like this. Just we already talked about it. Like, I don't need to go through every single player. Yeah. We've got hamstrings, yeah, knees, calves, Achilles. There's just so much potential for this all to fall apart. And that's just what scares me. It feels like this window has been closing slowly over the last couple of years. And I can't help but feel like it's shut this year, but we still want to buy in because Shanahan and all of the names and all of these guys, like, you tally up the fantasy points that everybody on this offense has scored over the last 10 years. I don't think there's a better offense in fantasy football, but they are all kind of on the downslope of that age curve. And that, you know, that scares me.
I think, though, that is why, God help me, I do gravitate to Pearsall because he has the same injury concerns. There's no, yeah, okay. Well, I'm glad we're on the same page. We can land the plane there, right? Like, he is a guy that, like, anybody with a pair of eyeballs can tell you, oh my God, this guy is really good. Like, he separates extremely well. He's so dangerous in the intermediate area and the vertical areas. And Dave, like, even if Evans, I'm not about to call Mike Evans a sacrificial X receiver because that would be so disrespectful to one of the best receivers of our generation. But he is going to help a lot to just be the on-ball player to allow Pearsall to move around and kind of be in the role that he should have been in all along and kind of had to do more of the vertical stuff last year. So I'm very excited about Pearsall, and I find myself, like, when he goes in the range that he's in right now, I want to hit that button pretty much every single time because, yeah, he has the injury concerns of all these older guys, but at least he's younger, right? At least there's that.
And, you know, he's already got this injury-prone label. He's really only had one injury in the last, like, 5 years. He was healthy during his time at Florida. He dealt with that shoulder injury late in the season that kind of bled into the draft a little bit. So I think he had this injury-prone label, but he didn't miss any time with that shoulder injury. And then he had the off-field shooting incident going into his rookie season, which, that's not injury-prone. Like, that is just a freak accident there. And then last year was the first, like, real football injury that he has had. So I think we might even kind of unfairly be saying that Ricky Pearsall is injury prone when it's really just been one major injury that just led over an entire season. And then you talk about Stribling as well. And do I think Stribling is the best player in this offense? Absolutely not. But right now in fantasy drafts, you can get him in like round 18, and there is no risk whatsoever and pure upside. So, I mean, Stribling, yes, we have seen that this is not necessarily a profile that's going to hit all the time. Jonathan Mingo, Xavier Legette, there's a lot of misses, but there's also T. Higgins, A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, these really athletic guys that fell in round two and landed in good offenses and did break out. I'm not saying DeJuan Stribling is the next A.J. Brown, but, you know, does fit a similar archetype there. And I think people have only talked about the downside and aren't talking about the upside that can be realized if Stribling does hit in this offense.
I'm with you on that. And I liked Stribling. Again, I didn't think he'd be the 33rd overall pick, but I did like him as a day two guy. And I just think a lot of the pushback to him has been people not realizing that he was going on day two. Like, I think that's been a big part of it. And just, look, not being just dialed into the draft because you got a life. Like, that's fine. And I totally think that that's good for you guys. I don't have one of those. So I was locked in on the Stribling thing. Okay. Fifth and final question here from me. And again, there's no way of knowing this. We will have no idea, and I will not believe a single word that the Indianapolis Colts say about it. But is Daniel Jones capable of being 80 to 90% of the same player he was from weeks 1 to 8? And most importantly, Dave, if he's not, then what? And clearly the Colts have hung their whole season and really Chris Ballard's job and all of this, like, era, they've hung it on those 8 games. when they were one of the best offenses in NFL history for those that brief little moment of time. But it comes back all the way around to what I said at the top about the Jaguars. The dumbest thing the teams do is just be like, oh, we're just going to that happened there. We're going to just run that back again this year. The Colts are pretty much doing that just without Michael Pittman. So you can ask yourself, like, all right, we're just kind of down one guy here. I like Downs. I think he can step up, but, you know, it's a whole thing. Where are you at with Daniel Jones? And if he is not close to the same version that he was last year, both from a play perspective and from a health perspective, that's a big part of this. What happens then to some of these guys that we are counting on from a fantasy standpoint?
Well, first I want to say it's kind of, I think this might be like an addition by subtraction thing without Michael Pittman. Just, you know, now you can get the ball to Tyler Warren and Josh Downs and Alec Pierce even more. So I think there are too many mouths to feed. Now you kind of consolidate that offense to young, good players. Fair. So I don't even mind Pittman being gone. Good player, but I think that the Colts can be fine without him. With Daniel Jones, though, I find myself drafting him a lot. And, you know, we all saw the Achilles injury, but it kind of went like underreported that he was playing with a fractured leg before the Achilles injury, too. So he kind of had this fall off in production that a lot of people point to, but it came out that he was playing on a fractured leg. So I'm willing to kind of excuse that fall off. I think this is a perfect offense for him. He's got just enough mobility to do the things that Shane Steichen wants. You've obviously got the offensive line. Jonathan Taylor makes it really easy to run a play action offense, and then just playmakers all across at tight end and wide receiver. So I am buying in here, and I know the Achilles injury scares people off so much. We have seen rapid advances in modern medicine when it comes to Achilles injuries. You know, we saw Kobe Bryant, that was supposed to be his career ender. He came back. Kevin Durant followed a similar. And now we've got these NFL players, Aaron Rodgers, Cam Akers, coming back with this speed bridge Achilles repair that they do. And it sounds like he's going to be ready for the start of training camp. They said a 6 to 8 month recovery happened around the midway point of the season. So I think Daniel Jones is going to be out there in training camp. I have a lot of faith in Shane Steichen. And it's not even so much that I believe in Daniel Jones being a great quarterback. I believe in the offensive system. I believe in the playmakers around him. And I like that he gives you just a little bit of rushing upside on top of everything that he's doing as a passer as well.
I think I 95% agree with everything that you just said there, which is like, I agree that Daniel Jones is a perfect fit for this offense. I think this offense fits him better than, you know, what Brian Daboll did with him, any of that stuff. Like I'm with that. And I really do like the setup of these playmakers, and I'm a big Shane Steichen fan. The 5% though that I have trouble with is just like, yeah, Daniel Jones can be out there, but is he out there? And this comes back to like, okay, is he 80%? Is he 75%? Like, what's the sliding scale there? Because I would argue that, yeah, Aaron Rodgers came back, like Kirk Cousins came back from those torn Achilles. I think they were severely diminished versions of themselves. They were older guys than Daniel Jones, sure, but they relied on their mobility a lot less than Daniel Jones does, and this offense did on Daniel Jones's mobility. And I just always think this is a thing that we and I've fallen into this trap many times, where just like, yeah, a guy's out there, but is he 100% himself? And if he's a diminished version of himself, how hot can this offense run? Now, the good news is, Dave, like, I don't really think any of these guys, other than Jonathan Taylor, like any of the pass catchers, they're not going in a range where it's super prohibitive, especially the receivers. I mean, Alec Pierce, they gave him all this money, and he's still going outside the top 30 receivers. Now, he's coming off an injury still, but like, that is the saving grace of this, is that you don't have to really pay an iron price to kind of find out.
Yeah, and I like Alec Pierce in this offense, but if there's one player that I do get a little bit concerned about, it's him. Just because we saw it was the right Achilles for Daniel Jones, and that is the plant foot when they're throwing. So we have seen it with when these guys tear their plant foot that they do lose a little bit of zip on the ball. So I do wonder early in the season how much we're going to see them leaning on the run game, getting these short targets to Josh Downs and Tyler Warren. It might take him feeling a little bit more comfortable on that structurally, or that surgically repaired ankle before he's willing to push the ball downfield. So I think that's the one fear that I might have. But if Alec Pierce does get off to a slow start, that thought's going to be in the back of my mind, and I'll be trying to buy low at the midway point of the season.
So what you're saying is that we're going to get a PPR scam for the ages season out of Josh Downs. Is that what you're telling me?
Josh Downs and Tyler Warren, they're both guys that I find myself drafting a lot of. I think, you know, in the Shane Steichen offense, we see so many of those short crossers, and I think a lot of that is going to be going to Josh Downs. And that's why they traded Michael Pittman away, because, you know, you can't get Michael Pittman off the field. He's very valuable at what he does, but I think by removing him, now you can showcase these more explosive younger athletes.
Listen, I had to get us a show of unknowns and theoreticals. I got to get us to end on a positive Josh Downs note, because that is something we can all feel excited about. Me, most importantly. Dave, this has been great. Exactly what I wanted out of this show. I'm so glad that you were willing to play ball on this topic. Tell the people what you're working on that they can check out here as we head into the true like meat of the NFL offseason.
Yeah, over on the Football Guys Fantasy Football Show, staying busy there with Joey Wright, Jeff Bell, and all the rest of the Football Guys staffers. Right now, we're doing a dynasty series going through position by position. After that, we'll be doing our team by team reports. And then, crazy to even think about, but by the time we're done with those reports, training camp is going to be here. Like, yeah, it's May right now. It still feels like the 2026 season is so far away, but my goodness, it'll be here before we know it. So just a couple of months left before we start seeing guys in pads and overreacting on social media.
Oh man, I'm not ready for that. I'm not ready for that, but I am ready to check out everything that Dave and the folks are doing over at Football Guys. They're absolutely crushing it. Dave is crushing it, and I come off the Football Guys coaching tree as well. So always happy to promote everything that is going on over there at Football Guys. Got a few things to tell you folks though here for this show. Couple of housekeeping notes. One, the all new 2026 Soccer Pick'em is here just in time for the world's biggest soccer tournament. Yes, that's right. Make picks each round, earn points, and climb the leaderboard. You can play solo, create a private group with friends, or you can join a public group to play with other fans, or even join our Yahoo Sports group to see if you can beat us. Yes, that's right. Join at yahoofantasy.com/soccerpick'em. And as for this show, this is our final week of two shows a week. We are going to go down to one show a week through the July 4th weekend. It's going to be great. We've got a lot of like big picture topics, and we've got a fun June coming up for you. Let me just say the Boone Brigade, they're going to absolutely love what's going to be happening in June. So a little teaser for that. But yes, one pod a week going forward. Those are going to come out on Wednesday, including this coming Wednesday. As I mentioned earlier, Nate Tice is going to join the show live at 2 p.m. Eastern as we discuss this tight end / heavy personnel revolution going across the NFL and how it is going to impact the fantasy landscape in 2026. Until then, we are out.